This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to another episode of The After Show. We've got a lot of things happening at the moment in our lives. Obviously, we're going to share along with you the journey. I know a lot of you are hanging out for that big announcement that's coming up. That is still a thing. We're getting closer and closer. Some people involved in the organization know about it more now. And we really kind of decided that until we kind of tick off a few more boxes in terms of the process that's going on behind the scenes, we'll announce it to you. Because even though we have the announcement, there's no point announcing it to you now because things are moving a little bit slowly with it, and it would just be this kind of anticlimax. You'd be like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And then it would be weeks between things happening. So still coming, still hanging out for it. So we've got a lot of stuff we want to cover today. Netflix series actually was Sex Education Season 2 is out. So I obviously binged the whole thing kind of regretfully. It's so addictive, and I would have liked to have spaced it out, looked forward to each episode. Mm. But when that next episode's loading and you got 3 seconds...
That's not what they want you to do.
It just gets you. And it's a bit of a shame. I might watch it again. Raph's going over the Aaron Hernandez story, which is sick. And then we've got listener questions. We've got some vegan questions, actually, which is interesting. Actually, quite a lot of nutrition questions this week.
Yeah.
And we'll just kind of update you on everything that's going on. So, everyone that's listening to this obviously knows that Conor McGregor fought on the weekend. Whether you love him or hate him, he is one of the most powerful figures in sport, for sure. He's basically a marketing genius. So we're looking at, watching the fight on the weekend, we're with the boys, and he's sitting there, we're sitting there, and we're looking at the Proper 12 whiskey sales. So Proper 12 is his Irish whiskey that he created.
For real men.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what the verdict is in Ireland, but I would just imagine, as long as you love Conor McGregor, which is 99% of Ireland, probably the only people that don't are like the Irish Mafia and that old guy punch in the face, then you buy his whiskey because it's a brand, right? Mm. At the end of the day, you will sacrifice a little bit of quality on something for what the brand represents, right? It's like if you're a... it's kind of like if you're a really big Nike fan, for example. The truth is, Nike does make some terrible clothes. Not in terms of how they look, but in terms of the quality. So, like a Nike pair of shorts is like $150, and then a Lululemon pair of shorts is like $100, Lululemon quality, insane. They never break, right? And if they break, you take them back, they give you a new pair. Nike, they fucking fall apart straight away. You put your phone in there, it slips out the pocket, it smashes on the ground. But you prefer Nike, the brand, so you buy it, you pay the extra. So that's how I imagine it is with Proper 12. Anyway, Proper 12 in 2019, I believe. Yeah, the 2018-19, they did $1 billion in sales just in the U.S., just in the US. $1 billion. Like, he has, you know,
I don't think that many people drank whiskey in the US.
Yeah. Well, apparently. So that is,
maybe they've taken it up.
Insane. Because you think about that. Now he legitimately doesn't have to fight anymore. Yeah. Like, what cut do you reckon? Obviously, he wouldn't own 100% of it, but I wonder what clip they would give him. I would say, like, minimum, like, the worst case scenario clip, he'd have like 20%.
I don't know, maybe.
You reckon that'd be way too worse.
I reckon. Yeah. I reckon, I mean, who knows? Maybe they're spending a fortune on marketing this whole thing. I mean, I think he does a lot of the work for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it an expensive one or a cheap? Is it like a cheap or expensive whiskey?
I think it's slightly more expensive than most whiskeys.
It's probably pretty good margin.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. $1 billion in sales. Like, that is... No one's ever really done that before with their own product. Like, what famous... I know Foreman brought out grills, but he didn't sell $1 billion in grills.
No, but he actually, I don't know what the comparison is, but George Foreman grills it's like the most successful athlete turned entrepreneur story there is.
Surely this beats it.
I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like very likely.
Dude, $1 billion in 1 year,
but
in the US.
But
only.
But a lot of people have George Foreman grills. It was absolutely. Okay, but here's the difference. I can bring up the numbers, I know for a fact it's more successful than like Air Jordans with Michael Jordan.
No way.
Yeah, apparently it is. Like, he put his name on it, and it's just, he made so many people have George Foreman grills.
Fuck, we need to look that up. Yeah. I'm gonna have to get you to look that up. That's intense. Well, because I'm thinking Jordan's obviously like way more as a brand, like I was talking about before, way more respect in terms of a George Foreman grill. Like, it's a grill, right? I mean, how excited can you get about a grill? But also, if you think about whiskey, like, if you like the Proper 12 whiskey, you could go through, like, you'll
you'll spend so much more money. Whereas a George Foreman grill, you might buy one, you might buy the next one in 10 years. You know what I mean? So maybe he made a lot of initial sales, but repeat sales might be quite low. Mm. Whereas once you get on the whiskey,
it's just
you're always drinking it, right? Yeah, you're just drinking it all
once
the time.
Once you hit that alcoholic's market.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of being an alcoholic.
It's game over. So anyway, the reason we bring this up is not to talk about his whiskey, actually. So I'm watching the fight, and if you paid attention to the fight, then you realize there wasn't much to pay attention to leading up to it. There wasn't a lot of press because for whatever reason... Okay, so McGregor has a lot of respect for his opponent. And so there just wasn't a lot of trash talking. That's what McGregor's obviously known for. That's how he cut his teeth, was just really good at talking shit to his opponent. And there just was none of that. So for a lot of reasons, which, you know, we're not going to use this podcast getting into them, but all it meant was that for me, it seemed like he had changed. Now, he's obviously no stranger to the limelight. He's obviously a savage Irishman, and I think that fame got to him a little bit, like it does to a lot of people, right? They just end up on benders and getting arrested and in court. It wasn't anything new, like that we hadn't seen before. Some superstar athlete rise to fame super quick, and then there's just this hard downfall. And, you know, you go, I imagine they do a lot of soul searching, these guys, in these periods, in these moments. And
in their $100 million mansions.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of soul searching in there. And, you know, I said at the end of the fight, as he was doing his post-fight press conference, I was like, man, McGregor's changed. It's almost like he's done Tony Robbins course or something. Just as a side comment, as a joke, with about 10 people in the room. Literally 20 seconds after that, big Tony, he's walking into the ring with his giant mittens. And I was like, holy shit, you guys heard me say that. He's right there. So it seems like he's the mindset coach for the celebrities, the celebrity athletes. So he has changed. It's interesting.
Well, I saw an interview with Conor talking about it, and he said that he's basically kind of like a life coach person now. I mean, I guess it's definitely not a fighting coach.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious.
But he's got the fighting thing down. Mm. Yeah, he just needs the life thing down. But yeah, you were saying like Tony is so well respected now.
It's a transformation. Like it used to just be humiliating to...
plays cassette tapes.
To be like, yeah, like I read his books. Like it's a bit embarrassing.
You know, my dad used to play his cassette tapes. Yeah.
He sold a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot. And I saw an interview like Dana White. Was it Dana White?
Dana White.
Dana White listened to his cassette tapes and stuff when he was... Because he was like super poor starting out as well. But it was still, you know, really embarrassing. It's like the massive guy with huge teeth and huge hands. And I would say probably, I guess, really 15 years. Insane transformation on that. Now he's like the coolest person to have as your coach.
Yeah. I wonder why he's become so popular in the personal development world. Is it... I think part of it is probably to do with new media. So like before, the only time you could get access to him is on infomercials on TV, but it's not like he had his own TV show. But now, because his content, he can put out so much content, he's got things like YouTube, podcasts, all these permissionless media platforms, he can get so much more of his message out there. People can consume so much of it because he's got a lot to say, right? And obviously the Netflix documentary launched him into, you know, kind of the mainstream as well. And it's just, more people just going to his seminars over time. Eventually, that pool is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? So
I think also, you know, because he's been doing it so long now, it's this unique thing where you've got people that did follow his stuff when they were young, and then they're like, you know, teens or 20s, and now they're like much older.
Yeah.
And they're maybe super successful, and they like go back, and it gives this like insane validation because he has so many people like Dana White on, and he talks to them like, oh, you're like billionaire now. I was like, yeah, like when I was in, you know, 19, I was listening to the tapes.
Yeah.
Because he's been like bringing out personal development for like, I think nearly 40 years.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of a multiplier effect of that, where these guys are just like, oh yeah, like I'm into it. I started two years ago.
Yeah.
They don't have success stories.
Yeah. They popped up overnight. Yeah. He is the original and the best. But you know, I've heard a lot of people don't like him as well. So, you know, it's not for everyone. So you did some,
that's the people that got burnt on the firewalk.
you were doing CPR training while I was, catching up with Eugene Teo. Coach Eugene, he actually has some really exciting stuff coming. He started his own gym, but it's not for anyone except him. And he's ordered all this crazy equipment. He's like customizing it and stuff because in that world that he's in that bodybuilding, like exercise science sort of scene, strength and conditioning, I didn't realize how frustrated a lot of them are with the machine, like the commercial fitness equipment that's out.
It's all they talk about is machines. Yeah.
Yeah, because the angles are right, like the seats don't adjust properly, the plate loading is in the wrong position. And so he was showing me, so we're catching up and he was showing me some equipment and stuff that he's getting to this gym, and it's really expensive, but it's some of the equipment companies out there, there's this bench, right? So imagine an adjustable bench, and the main part that you rest your back on, that part is almost like, just imagine it's in three vertical columns, right? And so the middle vertical column is slightly wider than the outside vertical columns. Yep. The outside vertical columns fold down. So the bench is like it's like the regular width, but then the middle column stays, and the outside two columns, you like press a button and they fold downwards towards the floor.
Yep.
So I don't even know what that's for, but I assume it would be like potentially to allow your shoulders to go back to do like curls, or to like go face first on it and do rows properly.
Keep your elbows. Yeah, yeah.
Because it makes the bench then really thin. Like, but it's still there so it can support you. It's enough padding to support you. So I think it's probably, yeah, when you do like heavy rows to take like the bench out of the way or something.
Everyone's got their thing, right? It's like CrossFitters always talking about their shoes.
Yeah.
Bodybuilders always talking about their machines and drugs. Yeah. Powerlifters is, I mean, they used to be, I think, always talking about suits.
Yeah.
Like multiply, triple ply, whatever. Right, right. And now it's...
all their bands.
Now, right? It's like wraps and bands holding their massive body and what they're going to get for lunch.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's crazy. But yeah, you did this baby CPR.
So
you
did it's like a CPR choking drowning course. CPR, probably everyone in fitness has done this stuff before. But the choking and the drowning part of things was very eye opening. It's like, I think it's drowning is the leading cause of death if you're very young. And then second is choking. And that's
what is the percentage, or what is the number in 10? So
I actually don't know. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. But what they did say is that drownings have gone up in the last 5 years. And like everything, drowning's been going down heaps. Because before they didn't have like gates and everything, right? Now everyone's got gates. Like, I don't think it's like almost illegal to have a pool and not have proper gate. So they've cracked down like crazy. But now because of iPhones and, well, I guess, Androids, all those types of phones, the drownings have gone back up. Because what they say is that whenever like an adult drowns, like it's super noisy, like yelling and thrashing. Whereas babies just drown completely in silence. They just like go in the water and then they just drop straight to the bottom.
Yeah, right. Fuck.
It only takes 20 seconds. It's pretty easy to get distracted. I get distracted for like an hour and a half on my phone.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to get distracted for 20 seconds. So going through all of that is fascinating. The choking is probably the most interesting. It's like babies die on grapes, on like big blueberries, you know, big raspberries, like pretty much anything that you can fit into your mouth that's like slightly round. So it was really like a course just to like instill fear into parents.
Hey, they're going to do it somehow. So when did babies start getting teeth? What age is that?
Yeah, then they start teething around like 10 months.
Okay.
10, 11 months. So like the first 6 months, it's like mostly just breast milk anyway.
Yeah.
And then after that, they can start, I can start tracking their macros.
First 6 months is breast milk.
Breast milk.
Okay. What is the macros on breast milk?
It's a good question. I did look it up.
No, is it in MyFitnessPal?
I haven't looked it up, MyFitnessPal. If I have a try of it, I'll definitely add it to my MyFitnessPal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like it's well-rounded, carbs, protein, and fat.
Mm.
That's why like milk is one of the only sources that has all three macronutrients like pretty even. Like, yeah, right. It's good solid macros from day one with babies. But what they usually say, I don't know, the nutrition stuff is pretty average of what I've experienced so far. But most people say that babies go on too high carbohydrate diets.
Too high.
Yeah, because people transition them from like breast milk, which is like, you know, good, kind of like medium carbs, and then they'll transition them to just like heaps of carbs. That's like easy food to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like all like mashed potato, mashed up, like heaps of sloppy stuff like that. You don't get them straight on like steaks and whatever, you know. So they tend to go on like way too carbohydrate diets, and that contributes to
fruits and vegetables and stuff, yeah.
Just erratic behavior.
Yeah. That makes sense because, you know, if you think about it, the only macronutrient you don't need is carbohydrates, right? You need fat and you need protein. And so, obviously, when something is forming and it's like using all the building blocks that it needs, if there's one building block it doesn't need, it's carbohydrates, because carbohydrates more like a fuel, right? So, I would just imagine, I mean, it obviously is a fuel which optimizes processes in the body, but yeah, I would imagine you don't need it as much as if it became the main macronutrient. Logically, it doesn't seem right. Like, you would want proteins and fats, you know, the things that are the main components of cells and tissues and brain and all that sort of stuff. Like, you would want as much of that as possible, right? In abundance. So I could imagine like the bone broths and, you know, just, I don't know, somehow blending up like animal products with fats in them would be super helpful. But obviously adult life's different. I've been actually having to increase my carbs. One of the things that my coach is getting me to do now is, you know, is actually really interesting, because I was having a conversation with the nutrition coach, and he was saying, like, you know, your fats, you've gone over your fats heaps. And he's like, that's cool. Like he goes, it doesn't seem like you can, if I told you to bring your fats down, you would be able to, or you would really, really not like me. And I go, yeah, I've never.
But would it get you any closer to your goals, bringing your fat down?
Maybe, maybe. But it doesn't matter, because the reality is, just how I like to eat food is generally I'm going to hit 100 to 120 grams of fat every day.
Yeah.
And he's like, cool, let's just keep that in and make everything work out, because the highest priority at the end of the day is still the total calorie count. And then we can adjust the macros accordingly. But that was really cool, because usually how I've been coached is like, no, these are the macros, like force the different amounts down. He's like, hey, it's just not sustainable if I try and bring your fats down 50 grams. Like, you're just not going to stick to it. And so rather than just fail every single day, let's just give yourself the room for fats and let's adjust accordingly with protein and carb. This is the ideal scenario, I would say, but this is just how you like to eat. And that was some really good coaching. I actually got a lot out of that, because then it felt like a lot of stress got lifted off. But anyway, I've had to increase my carbs, and I've just had to come up with some tricky ways to do it. Two things I've done. I've added oats back into my smoothie again, which has been really good. I actually prefer the instant oats, because they're already blended up.
Yeah.
So they're
way
less,
better. Way better.
Yeah, they're less gritty. And then
what are you trying to hit today? 300 grams?
280. Yeah.
Not crazy.
Yeah. And then the other one was I'm adding honey into like my dinner, like with vegetables and rice. You just put some honey in there, because I generally don't eat a lot of carbs during the day. So far it's been good.
Very good healthy source. I'm actually really excited, because we've had this massive nutrition kick. I'm excited to release the carnivore episode we did.
Oh yeah, with Paul.
Yeah, which will be coming really soon. And thought it was funny in that, where he's like, I never really thought about it, but honey is one of the only like animal product sources of carbs.
Yeah.
And it hadn't really ever occurred to me before. And it's a really, really healthy source of carbs. I've been adding in as well. The one thing I've noticed is like, when you do your macros, what is the ultimate thing to have up your sleeve is like a meal that you have at night after dinner that just you can combine to always fit your macros to make up for anything you've done in the day.
Yeah.
So I like finish dinner, I've always got like 20% left to eat in the day. And then I just like create exactly the right thing to make my macros work. And I do that with like yogurt, protein powder, and cereal.
Because
I have full fat yogurt, I got low fat yogurt. And like, you can always make it perfect, you know? So it's like, I think if you have something like that up your sleeve at the end of the day, it is a good way to make things fit.
You know, it's funny you said that, because so my coach, Brad, he's actually was saying, you know, we need to look at what, because I woke up and I think it either is my training changing a little bit, or what he thinks it might be the last meal I have before bed, because I started waking up. You know, I used to wake up so hungry that I felt nauseous. I started doing that again, and I hadn't had that for probably a year. So I used to have this thing where every morning at like 5 a.m. I would have to get up, because I actually felt like I was going to puke. I was so hungry. And then it just went away for whatever reason. And I think maybe because my training picked up a little bit, but he reckons it's because whatever the last meal is, it's too carbohydrate heavy. If it's too carbohydrate heavy, the sugar, blood sugar drops too low during the night, and then it wakes you up at the end, and you're like hypoglycemic, and you like need food, and you can get quite sick of it. So it hasn't happened this week, but it could be. I can't really remember. I'm gonna have to check the food diary to see what I was eating, but we might have to stick to a lower carb meal at the end.
It is one of the worst feelings in the world. I know it. It's
horrible, because you're like, oh, it'll pass. Like I'll just go back to sleep, because you don't want to wake up yet, and then you're like, oh man, it's just painful. Anyway. Lots of things changing. All right, last thing I want to talk about before we jump to this listener questions is, I was at a meeting on Friday for a friend of ours that is looking to raise funds for a project, an app that he's building at the moment, which I'm very excited for. And so I was connecting him with a friend of mine who does investing, and they ended up, so the three of us are just sitting in a boardroom, we're just kind of getting to know each other, we're just chatting, and one of the things that we had a discussion on was, and when I say having discussion, it was more like two extremely far superiorly more intellectual people than me having a discussion, and then me just nodding my head in agreement. And you know people are really intelligent when they're talking about very complex subjects, but even a noob like me can sit in and understand what they're saying. And they were talking about gray thinking. I never heard it like this before, but we're talking about the problem with a lot of the world at the moment, like world politics and climate change and nutrition, everything from the most macro scale to the most micro scale, is that there's this black and white thinking, and it's like, it's absolute. It's like either climate change exists or it doesn't. You know, it's either you go all meat and no fruits and vegetables at the moment, and it's like all plants and no animal products, right? It's this black and white thinking, and in, you know, outlier cases, some of this stuff might be true, but in the majority of situations, gray thinking is often where, like, the gray area, for lack of a better word, is where you will find the magic. And both of them just in agreement. And these are the kind of people that when they're agreeing on something, you know it's correct. Mm. Is that, yeah, a lot of the ideas, a lot of the things that we come out with, we need to think of them in a gray way. So gray thinking, not... So when you look at... So gray thinking would be if you look at a situation, or if you look at someone trying to sell you something, or if you're looking at an idea, or if you're looking to make a change in something, you think about it and go, is this on one end of either end of the spectrum? And if it is, what is the opposite end of this spectrum, and how can I find the middle ground? So maybe a good way to think about it is if you start a new training program, for example, and it's just like all powerlifting, for example, and maybe your goal is to get stronger, you think, and this person's like, no, you don't need accessory exercises. No, you don't need warm-ups. No, you don't need cool-downs. Like, you just need hard percentages, barbell work, bench, squat, deadlift. That is black and white thinking. And you need to think gray about it and go, okay, well, obviously the body just doesn't work in those three planes, and eventually you're going to get a serious injury and you're going to lack progress. So how can you integrate what you know, which is, say, the opposite end of that spectrum would be, say, the largest variety of movement. You probably don't need all the bodyweight stuff and all the bodybuilding accessory exercises and all the functional rehab movements, but you need some of that stuff to complement it. And that gray area is where the magic often happens, but it's not sexy. It's not exciting to talk about. So thought that was a really good discussion that they had. Obviously, it was different topics, but just a good way to think about just any decision you want to make. And actually, I put that in one of my daily emails. So if you are subscribed to those, you would have got it today. But if you're not, you should be.
Yeah, usually the way you see it in training is huge overreaction in the short term and then underreaction in the long term. So they'll be like, kettlebells will hit, and everyone's like, dude, this is it. Like, just barbells, burn them.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, can't burn a barbell. You melt the barbells down, like, to see if you can salvage a kettlebell out of it. Only thing that's useful.
Melt it down.
And you know, you're doing, like, all kettlebells, everything. And then after, like, a year, you're like, kind of getting over it. And then you just put the kettlebell away, you never touch it.
Mm.
And that's the underreaction in the long term. Then you don't actually, you know, use it in your training once or twice a week for some good lifts, you know? And that's really where it was. And you see that with most things. Like, they are useful. You overreact for ages, you get over it, and then you underreact for it in the long term and you completely leave it out. So,
yeah.
Trying to hit that middle ground is always tough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's jump into the listener questions that we got. So, we've got some good ones coming in. Remember, you guys can always ask questions, even if you have a question and it might be weeks between the, you know, we post on our Instagram a tile that says after show. Underneath that is where you can comment and leave your question. So even if you don't do it at the time, you can always jump on our profile, find the latest after show picture, click on it, and then write your questions in the comments. So, because our team will always find those and launch and add them into our channels. So we have them for every week to get into the choice. Now, we almost forgot. We're actually going to start a new segment of the show, which is Review of the Week.
Mm.
So we'll do that after this. But yeah, let's jump into the listener questions.
Okay, first question from Coots Man. Weight gain. I feel like a skeleton. I'm really active. Eat a reasonably balanced diet, I think. I thought I was eating more than I spent, but I've never calorie counted. Where do I start, man?
Mm. Yeah, that's a good question.
That's a good question.
So he's struggling to gain weight.
Struggling to gain weight. It's one of the best ones. It's like, it's really similar to people that are like, you know, like, I should be saving money and I'm pretty sure I'm like spending less than I'm earning, but my bank balance keeps going down.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm pretty sure you're spending more than you're earning. And it's really similar with weight gain. It's like, if your weight is going down, you're not going up, you're not eating more than you're spending.
Yeah.
But I think you've probably done the most weight gaining here. Where would you start him on? If he's not calorie counting at the moment.
Yeah. So, I think this is pretty common amongst hard gainers is that, you know, they often say, I'm eating heaps or I'm tracking a lot and I'm not gaining weight. And, you know, you are not an exception to the law of thermodynamics, unfortunately. Energy cannot be... you can't get rid of energy. You can't make it from zero. It cannot become zero. It can only be transformed. And so, basically, all that means for you is that you are simply not on the favorable side of the equation that you want to be. So, you don't have to be in extreme excess. You know, I think that when you feel really far behind to where you want to be in your physique, you feel Like, you have to be extreme to catch up. But ultimately, the most sustainable weight gain path is the one that's going to get you there the fastest. So what I would suggest is obviously take what you're eating now, and by the sounds of the question is you aren't gaining weight on what you're eating now, which means, and if you're not losing weight, then you're at a maintenance for what you're eating at the moment. Now, first of all, I would just try and be very consistent with your maintenance of where you are at the moment. Don't change your training. Don't change your levels of activity. Try and keep it relatively the same. And try and just be really consistent with what your diet is. Because you may have, and this is some of the mistakes I made, you have some really high calorie days, but they're so high that you almost the next day react by not being as hungry and you have a lower calorie day. So you end up evening out to feeling like you're bulking really hard on some days. And then on the other days, you're actually kind of reversing that process because your weekly total averages out to a maintenance. So just try and be really consistent on your maintenance. And then from there, now that you have a really good foundation, is when you can just add in an extra meal or you can add in some snacks. I think everyone wants to, you know, ramp everything up and get bigger plate sizes and throw in these super smoothie bulking recipes and get these supplements. You don't even need any of that at the start. What you need to do is just pick one extra snack, high calorie snack, carbs and fats and protein, and just add it in there. And that alone, that 300-400 calorie meal, that alone is enough to have you start gaining weight. And anything else outside of that is, like, whatever people are telling you is not optimal, because then you're gaining body fat. And in any bulking scenario, you don't really want to gain body fat. No one thinks it's accepted to that you gain some body fat when you gain weight. But if you could have a choice, you would only gain muscle, right? So you want to be as optimized to that as possible. And the best way to do that is only be up 250, 300 calories. Anything over that and you're putting on excess body fat.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're maintaining your weight, it's an interesting way to look at it, but you're so close to gaining weight.
Yeah.
Because you're at zero. Yeah. You're at maintenance. You're not far away from eating a surplus.
Yeah. And then once you go up a little bit, you may find that you're still not gaining weight. And so what do? You eat a little bit more and then you just add a tiny bit more each time. But each time, the point is, it's a tiny bit. It's not a lot. So that doesn't feel like much of a change. And then you can always, obviously, there's some other levers you can pull. You can change your training to only bodybuilding and strength training. You can minimize the amount of, like, conditioning that you're doing, high intensity work. You can even cut out a day's worth of training. You'd be surprised the less you, if you induce enough of a stimulus on the days that you are training, then on the days that you're resting, even if you add in an extra rest day, those are the days that you're really kind of building tissue. Sleep's obviously really important if you're trying to gain weight. So it's really hard to gain weight on 6.5-7 hours sleep, but it's a lot easier to gain weight on 8 hours sleep, 9 hours sleep. So sleep is really important. Hydration obviously is going to be super important. And then probably the last thing, but I wouldn't say this is probably not as effective, is you can use obviously some of those weight gain shakes as well for people that kind of feel like they can't eat any more food. And then it just does become a lot easier to just drink calories at the end. So obviously eating and chewing requires a lot more energy and preparation and time. If you just got a mass gainer shake, they work not because they're any better than food. They work just because it's easy to get down. Yeah. So that's your other option there.
Okay, awesome. We've got another nutrition question, Ant0.88. I'm considering making a transition to a plant-based diet, but I honestly don't know where to start. Do you have any recommendations?
So this is a good one.
It's an interesting question because, you know, so often people, if you were making a transition to almost anything else, people would always say, oh, you know, like, start, build it up slowly, like, don't go all the way in in your first day. Whereas with diet, it seems to be like the exception.
Right.
Whereas with diet, it's interesting whenever you're like, oh, I'm thinking about making like this transition to like vegan or this sort of diet. It's like, yeah, cool. So here's the rules, 100% in
right
on day one.
And that is black and white thinking, right? That's not gray thinking. So gray thinking in this scenario is, what is the most sustainable, easiest approach to making a change? And for anyone that's like pretty much over 23, 24, you realize the change is a lot harder to make, right? Your patterns are a lot more set. Your routines are a lot more set. And so making a significant change always is unfavorable to your long-term chances of sticking with that change. So best advice in this situation is to firstly gather some information. Okay, gather what are you going to be your protein sources? What are going to be your carbohydrate sources? What kind of cooking do you need to do? Are there, like, this is even before you change your diet, right? This is just the prep that you're doing. Okay, what are the supplements that I need to take? What are the Are there meal delivery companies that do a plant-based version? What are some supplements that I need to look out for potentially to up my levels? Like what, you know, iron and B12, B6, these sort of levels, they drop. So you want to make sure that you have enough of these in supplement form as well. And then do all that research and then just kind of have the plan in place. Now, at this point, you'd probably have the end game plan. You probably have to be, okay, this is what I want it to be at the end of this year, for example, in 12 months from now. You are not going to be able to do that on day one unless you're just a machine and you got no responsibilities in your life and you got all the time in the world to cook and transition, even for your gut bacteria. Like once you start cutting out a lot of your regular diet and replacing with new stuff, you'll find that a lot of people do have, and these are a lot of Gen Pop clients who've worked with for a long time, thousands of clients, they do report having issues with their bowel movement. Either they're getting too much bowel movement or like no bowel movement for 3 days and they're getting weird energy swings, and that's because they changed too quickly. So your gut microbiome will change for the little bit that we know about it. It will change slowly over time. And so it's worse just to throw some heaps of new stuff in it all at once. It's very extreme. It'd be like the same thing as you ate a whole bucket of KFC popcorn chicken. It's extreme. Your body's not going to like it. That would be the same thing if you cut out all your regular diet and you just threw all this fiber in there, plants, vegetables, fruits, all that stuff. So that is definitely one thing to consider. So you've got your plan in place and now you want to just pick one, the easiest thing to change on that diet, and you do that till it's easy. And that could just be, all right, no dairy and, or just no dairy to start with, right? No dairy. And I guess if you want to replace some of those calories with, okay, every time, for all the dairy I cut out, I'm going to replace it with an apple and a banana every day. So you replace that energy. So you've done that and then just rinse and repeat until you're kind of on the end game plan. Now, obviously what will be, and this is what we spoke about with Simon Hill, is it seems like in an omnivore diet as well, supplements will be an integral part of it. So I would recommend obviously a protein powder. That would be a huge one. We actually have had, you've used the vegan protein powder from True for a while, right?
Love it. Yeah. Absolutely. It's the best one.
You prefer it over the whey?
Yeah.
Why do you prefer it over the whey?
I don't know. It has a different, like a really different texture about it.
Yeah.
Like it mixes much more easily.
Mm.
Particularly as I generally just have it with yogurt. I don't actually have it with like water.
Mm.
So that better texture.
Oh, you have
like,
it with yogurt?
Yeah. It mixes way better.
Right.
Really good. And I think...
Well, obviously the vegans can't mix it with yogurt.
Yeah. That's so. And I also just think, you know, I have a lot of dairy and meat protein. I'm like, hey, probably good to have some plant sources for some variety in my protein intake.
Well, I've had some, I remember I got like a few different hemp proteins when hemp protein was raging for a while. Disgusting.
Mm.
Disgusting. I've had the True vegan protein. It's much
it's
more delicious.
So good.
Yeah, it's way better than most vegan proteins out there. So, and the vegan protein market obviously has gotten a lot better over time as the demand's gotten higher. But yeah, the True do a fantastic job, obviously. And if their whey's are really good, you know that their plant stuff's going to be really good as well. And then, yeah, you want your... B12 supplement, you probably definitely want an iron supplement. You probably want vitamin D3 as well. You want your fatty acids. So like your omega-3s, you want EPA, DHA, that'll be in that, and the fish oil. Oh, you can't have fish oil. What is it? Krill?
No, not krill oil.
No, krill is still an animal. What is it?
Flaxseed oil?
Yeah, flaxseed oil and algae. I think it's algae. Yeah. So... Yeah, that would be our recommendation. Remember, like for us, we're never going to be, I think this is maybe sometimes the criticism that people have for us is, you know, we're not the experts in this topic. And we never have claimed to be a nutritional expert. We've never claimed to be a training expert. We've just accumulated a lot of knowledge from a lot of smart people. And we know how to coach it. We know how to get people to do it. And that's the most important thing. That's the thing we're struggling with, right? It's no lack of knowledge here. It's the lack of the ability and the system to put in place to get people to do it. And that's really part of what this podcast is about. So, with this plant-based stuff, obviously, we're not the experts in the plant. That's why we get experts like Simon on. But where we are the experts and where we have experience coaching thousands of people is like it's from implementing it. It's how we get our coaches. It's how we get our clients to implement what we're doing. That's really where the magic is.
And I would add on to this. I think that if you are going to give something like this a crack, I would take some measurements at the beginning. Try and like work out why you're actually doing the diet in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people do diets and they don't even want to admit it just because they want to get in better shape and see some shredded vegan guy on the internet.
Yeah,
no one ever actually thinks vegan's like the best way to get in shape. You know, that's obviously, you can do it with any diet.
Yeah.
And it's more about your macros and deficits and everything like that. So you have a good thing, like if you're doing it for some other reasons, like energy levels, whatever, then have some measurements, maybe like blood work or like just like measure your energy for a certain period of time. So you can see over time if it's better than when you started. And maybe you don't need to go all the way, or maybe you do all the way, but you've got to have some baseline of body fat or whatever, I think, to measure it against.
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
Okay, next question is from Coco Nixo. Question of huge importance. Analyzing physical preferences in modern humans. Why do most guys obsess over bigger biceps and bigger chest? I get that bigger biceps give you bigger arms and clothes fit better with a nice chest, but I feel like most people train way past that.
Okay, so I guess he's only specifically asking for guys, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, we do know that genetically, they've done research and studies on this where people are being, they're getting big groups of people and they're getting other groups of people to kind of look at them, and they're not using their face or anything to see what are the preferences that people go for in terms of what is beauty, right? They've done it for just face. So, like, they've got stuff to do with the proportions of how close the eyes are together and how long the face is and the jaw. They've got all that stuff. But in terms of the body, universally, what the most preferred ratios are is for guys, it's a shoulder to waist ratio. And for women, what guys most prefer, or what women most prefer in women, is a hip to waist ratio.
Yep.
So having narrower hips, so your hip is a, narrower waist, which is around your belly button, to a wider hip is the most preferred. I think it's got to do with childbearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the most preferred ratio for women. And then for men, yeah, it's the shoulder to waist ratio. So having wide shoulders and a narrow waist is the genetic preference that people have when they look at men. So I guess how biceps and chest relate into that, I don't think it's the fact that that is genetically what people want. So maybe take that out of it, because it doesn't necessarily affect, like, if you just got huge chest and biceps, it doesn't really affect that ratio. Obviously, it'd be like more delts and back and stuff that would affect that ratio more. I think what it is, it's just that it's culturally what the most...
But it's also what you can see in the mirror, probably the easiest.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, like, culturally, you see it everywhere. It's like a guy with the chest and his biceps and stuff. Like, that is the area that's focused on. You don't see lots of models where they're like checking out his glutes and like photos of his back, you know? It's always the front. It's what we can see at the front. It's what we care about at the front. Why the abs, you know, I'm surprised he didn't say abs. They're in those. Well, and people just take it too far, because that's all the culture seems to put weight on and care about. So that's all they choose to care about, because they don't really care about their retracted shoulder position or wide lats or whatever, because they don't see it. You know, if you, every time you trained, a camera filmed you from the back and all you could see in the mirror was your back, you'll be like, wow, that is a weak, pathetic back. I probably want to train my back. It's just what you can see. That's all it is. It's like, I see guys in the Globo gym now, they train, you know, obviously there's the standing bicep curls in front of the mirror. That's like the classic. And when I always see that and I look from the back, I'm like, you're weak. You're weak. You don't have a posterior chain. Like, duh. That is how you can tell when a guy is strong or not. Is from the thickness of his hamstrings, his glutes, his back, like his neck, you know, his traps. That's where strength comes from. Strength comes from your back. Strength doesn't come from your chest and biceps. They're tiny muscles. Yep. All they do is like hold things close to you and bring things towards you. Your back is like, helps you support when you lift things up, and you have to train a back as a guy. I think that's probably the most under-trained part of like male physiques, is like heavy back training. Like, some guys do back training, but they don't really train it that well. Like, they don't train heavy. That's where the thickness and the strength comes from. Like, heavy deadlifts, like really heavy barbell rows, like heavy like RDLs at the knee. Like, you have to really load up your back, I find, to get it thick and strong.
Yeah, I also think the chest and biceps are probably the most easily accessible muscles to train.
Yeah.
You don't lose range of motion. It's very easy muscles to train. Back is hard muscle to train. It's
to much like feel
harder,
it and stuff.
Much harder to feel the muscles working, get your scaps working, you know, keep your elbows in the right position, all that sort of stuff. Particularly, I think, as you know, daily life makes training your posterior even harder.
Right.
Because you're in the wrong positions all day. Doesn't really make training your biceps any more difficult.
Yeah.
Still easy.
Yeah.
It's still easy. They're also just like simple. And I think because they're simple, they're quite rewarding, because it's so easy to make them sore, so easy to get them to grow. And you can just kind of ignore the more difficult, even though more productive muscles.
Yeah. I think also, like, there's just a lot of reinforcement for developing your chest and biceps, right? You know, how often would a girl compliment on a guy and his well-developed back? She wouldn't, right? She would just think, wow, that guy just looks really good. Like, he just looks strong, you know? She doesn't go, you have really nice rhomboids, you know? But she might look at your pecs and go, wow, you have really nice chest, you know? But the back gives that you like if you heard the inner dialogue of, and obviously I'm just choosing this particular scenario, but if you heard the inner dialogue of, or this is how I imagine it would go down, obviously could be wrong here, but this is what girls tell me, that when they see a guy and they go, wow, he's really big and he looks really strong, is they don't really know exactly what muscle to point to, but I know what it is. Mm. It's their glutes, it's their hamstrings, it's their back. That person can deadlift like 200 kilos, right? That's where like size and strength comes from. But when it's their chest and their biceps, it's very obvious.
Yeah.
Because you're looking directly at those muscles and you go, wow, you have a nice chest. Wow, you have nice biceps, right? And so just in my opinion, I just really think a well-developed posterior chain is like the most appealing.
Yep.
Like you get your chest and your biceps to a point, and then I feel like from there, getting like the hamstrings, the glutes, like the back, the width in the back, the thickness in the back, like that's what looks cool. When I see a guy in a gym that's like got a thick back, I'm like,
there's the glory muscle.
I'm like, respect, bro. Yeah. Respect. You're a strong motherfucker.
Okay. Mick Vajas. I have a question about how to progress with fitness in a home gym environment. Barbell, kettlebells, assault bike, and rings. It's a sick home gym.
Mm.
No coaching available. How would you go programming for this scenario?
Bro, this is why we're bringing out programs. Mm. Yeah. Well, we'll have some programs in the future, actually, where we've got a trial going at the moment. Actually, it hasn't started just yet. 28th?
I think it's already closed off. Like, I think we've already got enough people for the trial.
Okay. Yeah. So, right now, behind the scenes, we are trialing some programming software and writing some programs, full programs. You know, obviously, we've had the booster programs, the deadlift booster is on sale till the end of... Actually, speaking of a giant back, that is what you should do. You should add the deadlift booster into your program. Putting the deadlift booster in there would definitely thicken up your back. That's 30% off till the end of Jan. But we're putting full programs now. Obviously, these booster programs are add-ons to programs. This is a full, complete program. So, we'll have something soon like that. And there will be different ones. You know, there'll be like a strength template. There'll be like a hypertrophy 1, hypertrophy 2, hypertrophy 3, that sort of thing. There'll be rehab. And then there'll be like home gym when you've got like minimal equipment. I think that, again, it's like any situation. It's kind of the wrong question. It's not how you would program. It'd be like, what are your goals? If your goals are just to throw down for 30 minutes every day and have fun, just go on some like WOD generator and just generate fun WODs for you to do. But if your goal is like, you know, I want to run a marathon and get a certain time, like, okay, we need, you know, the dumbbells and the barbell work. It's going to be all supplementary to a lot of endurance training, which is going to be running an assault bike, you know, some kettlebell work. So it does really depend on your goals. You have enough equipment to achieve most goals, right? So you can really get there with what you have.
Yeah, I mean, I had a home gym, used to train super hard. And I think what's critical going back to when I was doing is you've got to find what is going to motivate you, because most people struggle with home gyms not because of the equipment, because of the motivation.
Right.
Some people just love it, but a lot of people you generally find they get over it because of the motivation struggles. And you know, back when I had my home gym, I would like invite a friend over a couple times a week to come train with me in the home gym. Yeah, and that can be motivating because you just, it's not always just you by yourself. Or I would think about just having someone, like some sort of coach that programs for you.
Did you have a mirror in your home gym?
No.
Okay. Did you like what was your main attire when you trained in your home gym?
If I was by myself, just underpants.
Yeah.
Because it was boiling. I would train, sometimes it was 46, 47 degrees Celsius.
Because you never had aircon up in that time.
Never.
Is there aircon up there now?
There is, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Never Airbnb without aircon. But it was like, we have like this, like an external thermometer we'd have up there. And it was like 46, 47 degrees sometimes when I was training.
Is it your parents' home?
Absolutely. Yeah, attic, yeah. I would just be like pouring.
It's actually quite a low roof. Did you do strict press up there?
Yeah, for sure. Jim Wendler, 531.
I couldn't do strict press up there.
Nah, probably not. Never even thought about it as a problem for me. I had a full rack above my head.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Or I would get, you know, something like, for me personally, like having someone that programs on True Coach is super motivating. Like, if you just know yourself and you just know someone checking your scores, it's like that might be enough for you to stay really motivated and keep training hard in your home gym.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about the home gym is it's an insane time saver. Like, you're 1 minute later, you're in the middle of your workout. Yeah. 1 minute after you're done, it's sick. And I reckon it's such a good option for long-term sustainable fitness. But I do think that most people realistically do struggle if it's just them. No one's ever coming over. No one checks their scores. And they expect to become unbelievably fit and strong. Like, that's not most people.
Yeah. Try and tap into an online community.
Yeah.
That's going to be the helpful part. Cool.
But it's a good question. And I love home gym. So, you can send in your home gym.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah. So, if you guys have home gyms listening now, please send us in a photo of your home gym. Just DM us on the Instagram.
Last question, the Master Brownie. What are your thoughts on the trending intermittent fasting? I was listening to Dr. Sachin Panda, does fasting have to be consistent or just throw in whenever you want, e.g. consecutive days?
Yeah, again, I think this is just a goal question. Like, what are you trying to get out of fasting? Because if you're using fasting for calorie restriction, then there are obviously multiple ways to go about it, but it just might be the easiest way for you to do it. And I know a lot of people that try and keep their calories down, and it works really well for them. Mm. They have a really busy morning. They rush out to work and they're in meetings all morning and stuff, and they're trying to lose weight, and it just makes sense. They're basically doing it anyway. They're just having a coffee and some water and maybe a piece of fruit, and they just weren't really eating much since dinner the night before. And it works really well for them, because then they just, you know, eat their meals as normal, and naturally, because you took out so much time in the day, it just is keeping your calories down. Now, I don't think it is necessarily the best strategy for long-term kind of weight loss and stuff, because I think just culturally, like, you know, on the weekends, people want to go out and get breakfast, right? And you don't want to be that guy sitting with all your friends and all you got is a black coffee while everyone's eating their breakfasts. So that's just probably one thing to consider as well, is like socially, it kind of alienates you a little bit in the weekends, I find, with intermittent fasting. It's just hard to stick to. And therefore, it's just not a really good plan overall if it just only works in some scenarios. You want to try and find stuff that works really well. Now, and so, yeah, and so on that, you should use the best calorie restriction plan, which I don't think is fasting. People have way more success with other, just like more gradual calorie restriction. Now, the health benefits of intermittent fasting. Now, we actually wanted to do a podcast just on fasting, I remember, so we could explain to you guys what the benefits would be. And there's a lot of research out there, obviously, showing that cell autophagy is what it's called. It's where they like reset, where cells kind of like cannibalize themselves. They cannibalize the unhealthy cells and they regenerate the healthy cells, which is an extremely important process. It's kind of like a... what do you call it when you clean out your Mac? It's like Mac cleanup or PC reset, you know, where you clean all the junk files out and like clear up some of the processing power. That's kind of how I would think about it. And it's a very important process. Now, there is some early stage, there is some good research that a friend was sending me that they've actually observed that particular process or those benefits from fasting actually come when you experience those heavy bouts of hunger. So as you're fasting, pretty early on, probably hour, two, three, 4 hours in, you're like getting that first wave of a lot of hunger. There's some research now showing that the benefits of fasting have been close to maximized at that point. Mm. So at that point, you don't need to then go another 5-6 hours of fasting. You have experienced the majority of the physiological benefits of fasting at that point. Now, that's awesome. That means you don't have to keep starving yourself. But there's like some good evidence to also show that just being able to restrict yourself from gluttony in a way and restrict yourself from food, like mentally, is a good practice as well, to be like, okay, I can go without food. So there are some obviously benefits there of not ever having to rely on anything. It's like the same way I wake up every morning and I need a coffee. Like, I'm not in a good position right now where I need a coffee every day. I would like to think that I don't have to have it. I could force myself not to if I want to endure headaches for two days, but that's kind of the position you want to be in, is not have to do anything. So it's an interesting one, fasting.
Yeah, I heard a few podcasts with the Dr. Sachin. It is pretty cool. I think that probably the route you might want to go down or have a look at it. I mean, they call it something slightly different. It's like time-restricted eating as opposed to intermittent fasting. It's basically the same thing. But what he's talking about more there is like to do with your sleep circadian rhythms. So he talks about how obviously you have a circadian rhythm where you pick up light in your eyes, but you also have it in the gut, and it basically goes off what time you're eating.
Yeah.
Kind of the day and night schedule. So I'm quite sure he's recommending getting like all your food in around 8 to 12 hours and really avoiding eating outside of that window, which I do think is a really good practice. Like, I do think late night eating can be really, really bad for your sleep.
Yeah.
Like, you always notice at the times when you're just like, hey, every day I basically eat between 7 and 7. And anytime you eat outside of that, I do think it affects your energy levels and it affects your sleep. So I think, particularly if you have late nights and stuff like that, potentially setting yourself up with an eating schedule in the day is a pretty good practice for your health.
Yeah.
Whether the science comes out or not, whether it's like super important for your sleep.
Yeah, I just remember Rhonda Patrick telling you that they've studied some stuff in the gut where those cells that are, those gut microbiota cells that are produced to digest food, their lifespan is 12 hours is what they've observed. I've actually heard some people counter that. say that it's actually not true, and that a lot of that gut, those early gut studies are like very, very inaccurate. But you know, this is what she said, saying that, yeah, you kind of have this 12-hour window where they're maximized, and outside of that, you don't have the same digestive power, the same kind of processes that you would normally have in your gut during that 12-hour window, and therefore, you're kind of a little bit compromised in how you utilize the energy from the food and you digest it, and you get some issues there if you're constantly eating outside that window. There's probably some good evidence to suggest as well, like if you just kind of look at observational studies of people that do kind of eat in all these weird time cycles and hours and really stretch out periods, probably not in as good a shape. But I could also say the same thing about myself. I never stick to a 12-hour window, and I wouldn't say like I'm in terrible shape either.
It's not disastrous.
Yeah.
Okay. We're up to the Netflix reviews.
Oh, wait. Hold on. No. So, new segment of the week. We wanted to kind of boost up the reviews a little bit on iTunes. If you guys are listening on the... if you're just really on any app right now, you can go into the app and you can leave reviews in the app. I'm pretty sure on the Apple app, you just kind of click on our show and you scroll to the very bottom and you can see the ratings and you can just rate it in there already. So what we're going to do every week, we're going to pick a review of the week, and then we're just going to give away a digital training journal and then a booster program of your choice as well. So free digital training journal, which is, what's it worth these days? $25?
$15.
$15. And then, a booster program, which is worth $49. So review of the week this week is going to go to, we actually only had one. So I'm going to scroll down. And it wasn't it was a plant-proof fan. They weren't particularly stoked about that episode. so I don't think they'll want anything from us. So we'll go with, now listen out for your name. You're going to email us in orders@themymuscleproject.com. Okay, so you just tell us that you were that winner and we'll send it off to you. This is from Woozer, W-O-O-U-S-E-R, Woo User. Awesome podcast. Knew about these guys, but only started listening to the podcast. Such a great and diverse group of guests. Looking forward to the weekly shows now. Awesome. Thank you for the amazing review.
Sick.
Send us in an email and we will shoot you off the training journal and any booster program of your choice, bench, squat, or deadlift. And there'll be more to choose from in the future. So guys, rate and review us. Give us 5 stars. Give us your thoughts. Give us 1 star if you think we're terrible. And we'll do the review. Hey, maybe if we got like a really, really funny 1 star review and like a terrible comment, it could be the review of the week. Hopefully not, but could make review of the week. So this is the new segment of the show. All right.
Sick.
Netflix.
All right. We've got some really good ones this week. First one I watched is Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. Now, if you're American, probably already definitely heard of Aaron Hernandez. If you are Australian, likely not. It is a 3-part series. So I think they're about 1 hour shows, doing a documentary on, and it's not like a spoiler thing, because it was obviously huge and in the news, but he is a professional football player for the New England Patriots. Which,
what was his last season? What year was it?
His last season would have been... So he played in the year that he scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and then he came to camp, and then obviously didn't get to complete that season. So I think 2014.
Okay.
When it all came out.
Hasn't played for a while.
No. It's been a little bit, because, you know, they got to make the documentary.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think you see a police car and like all these police people around, you're like, oh, I wonder when the Netflix documentary is going to come out about this. I'll just find out then. It's unbelievable. This is like perfect one for me because I studied law, so I love like the law ones. And obviously, it's all sports, so I like that. And I was at the same college like 2 years after him, where like basically his kind of crime spree began. So it was really, really good. It is one of the most unbelievable stories. I think it's the first time ever in America that someone has like done murders and then gone on and played professional sports after.
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot of murders like OJ, but I mean, that was like way after he retired. Like, that's a different ballgame. Like, to go back out there.
Where do you think he did it?
Allegedly. So there are a lot of psychos. And it's much more than just like, you know, whether like about him killing someone. It's much more about the effect of like him being homosexual and like how difficult it is and how much toll that takes on him. Also, like, obviously, like always in these cases, some very strange like father figure and parents in his life when he's growing up put him in an upset one. And I know it's controversial, but there is also quite a bit about whether the CTE, so like the head knocks in football, had an effect on him. A lot of people since the Netflix documentary have come out and been like, had nothing to do with that.
Right.
Like, this guy's a psycho. He was a psycho before he was getting hit in the head.
Yeah, says the NFL CEO. Yeah.
Probably. But I think some, because he did, he took some really hard knocks in the head in his career. And also painkillers.
Yeah.
Is a huge yeah, problem of his
opiate
well,
addiction.
Because he was basically on painkillers, you know, constantly for every single game. And then he was on marijuana, which probably also has something to do with the pain as well. Yeah. Very likely, considering how, like, you know, waking up like a car accident every Sunday or every Monday, how that had an effect as well. So it's kind of like touching on all these different issues. And it's an unbelievable story. So I think if you like true crime or you like sports, you got to give this one a watch. I'm going to give it like 4.5 out of 5.
Wow. No one comes out of an NFL pro career like in good shape. Only Brady, really.
Oh, he's only got Brady. He's got to have some secrets. Well, I mean, they go into the movie, but like everyone, and this is a little bit before the crackdown, but like when he was playing for University of Florida, and he played when they were with Tim Tebow and, you know, winning all the championships, like everyone was bent over and they were getting painkiller shots like before the game, like injections.
Injections?
Injections, yeah.
Of opiates.
Yeah, painkillers, like really, really strong painkillers.
Yeah, yeah. Opioids, yeah.
Yeah, they used to say like, you know, have the bowl of painkillers out there would be like Smarties, like it's a big bowl and everyone would be grabbing a handful. But like, yeah, injections of painkillers halftime and before the game. Because you got to remember, it's like the sports team is like how they market the university, right?
Yeah.
University is an unbelievably huge business. The players, I mean, they're characters that come and go.
Yeah.
You know, they're not even paid.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, it also just goes into how it kind of messes with people's heads when you become like so cool for school. And those players in college, like they're way too
superstars,
cool.
Yeah.
It's a joke. You know, I remember when I was there, there's a road outside the cafeteria, right? Like a road where cars and buses come down. And this football player has got this big shiny car that I'm sure they gave to him for free.
Yeah.
He drives down, he parks, he stops in the middle of the road, gets out, walks into the cafeteria, starts loading up his pizzas, like all this food. This huge guy walks back out. He's just left his car in the middle of the road, right? Like there's cars and buses. Everyone's beeping. Like he walks out. Everyone looks at him. Everyone just stops beeping. Just dead silent. Everyone's like, awesome, bro.
That's crazy. Stock up on so your food. He's stopping traffic.
Stopping traffic. Walks back in his car. Gets food. Drives on.
It's that, too
like,
much.
And that's the level like of like hero these guys
you don't have. At. You don't have the skills to deal with that level of fame when you're that young. It fucks with you. It's not good.
It's not good.
It fucks with you. Yeah, they walk out in a crowd of 50, 60,000 people every single weekend.
Well, 120.
Fuck.
The stadium is full. Like, every game is sold out. It fits over 100,000.
Very few Australian full-time professional athletes would ever experience that in their whole life.
But it's actually beyond that, I think, because where he was, he's living in a college town. Nearly every single person in that town goes to the college.
Right.
Like, including, you know, the bouncer and the person that works at the store and, like, everybody, right?
So, everyone knows you.
Everybody knows
everyone
you.
Knows
everyone
you.
Knows you.
Yeah.
And, like, that's... And it's in there. Like, he commits crimes in there. And it was the same when I was there. Like, one of the number one basketball players got caught with marijuana when they're there, and like, you know, it's illegal, but they're constantly trying to rub that stuff under the rug because it's just like, that's just inconvenient.
Yeah,
you know, this guy's getting caught, so they get used to that sort of behavior.
Fuck, it's crazy. Yeah, they must feel like gods. So I watched, I think I talked about it last week, Sex Education brought out season 2, and yeah, they crushed it. Yeah, I don't know if you haven't watched it yet and you just love that sort of. You love the nostalgic sort of feeling that you get when you watch certain series where it kind of relates a lot to your life. It's just so good. It's interesting. We're talking about the show and how it's very PC, like politically correct, in terms of, but in a way that's not, you don't really notice it until you're kind of discussing or thinking about the show afterwards. And what they're doing is they're showing a very well-rounded but entertaining representation of all different types of people and their struggles in the show. Now, typically when you used to watch shows that were based on teenagers and high school and all the dramas that go on in high school, it was like, it was very heterosexual. And it was, you know, always the white people. And every now and then, you know, as the culture changed, they were bringing in black characters. Now, it's every race, every color. It's transsexual, it's homosexual, it's heterosexual, it's asexual, like all the confusing, weird things, so that anyone watching that show can kind of relate to it in their way. Because I imagine it would be a very frustrating process to be like, I don't know, a very outlier in your sexuality and watch a show and it's like all they do is represent the majority. Like they never, ever have something for the minority, and it probably alienates them more, makes them feel weirder, makes them more on the outside. And I guess when you can watch a show like this, which is a huge, huge show, a Netflix original, it's getting millions and millions of streams, and you see they're you can relate to their struggle and you're an outlier, it probably makes you feel really good. Yeah. You know, it makes you probably not feel like you're alone. And so I think the show did a really, really good job, and I have to commend them on that in being quite PC in a way that doesn't ruin the show at all. Like, it's just like, oh, they're clearly doing this. You know, they're clearly doing that. This is their agenda in this, you know? So, yeah, season two, just, I don't know what I gave season one, but in your season two, 4.5, I think if you binge 8 hours in a weekend,
oh my God,
then I did a pretty good job. Oh, 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then you did a pretty good job. So, well done, season two. The most depressing thing is finding the release date of season three, and it's a year from now.
2021.
And I'm just devastated. Devastated. Absolutely crushed from the inside. So, that's how it goes. All right, guys. We mentioned a few of our sponsors on this show. All the links to our partners in the description of this episode. Remember, review of the week. Send us an email. orders@themindmuscleproject.com. We'll send you your gift. And yeah, leave us a review next week. Share it with people as well. And yeah, well, we love you very much.
And what I recommend, yeah, if you have never tried True Protein before, the best part of it is just it's the best tasting protein powder there is. But they're doing a sample box. So it's like $24 with our discount. It's even less. And then you can just try the flavors, and it gives you like samples and shakers and everything you need to try it out.
No, that's sick. Awesome, guys. All right. Speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.